Blog Talk Radio.
There's a better world is to come and tell you why. There's a better world is to come and tell you why. We will feed them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world is to come and tell you why. There's a better world is to come.
Good evening and welcome to Progressive News Network. I'm your host, News Director Richard Spezak, welcoming you to tonight's show. We've got a wonderful show for you tonight. It's our economic recovery show featuring Dr. Rich Templin of the AFL-CIO's Director of Legislative Affairs, Jason Smith with Awake the State, Jose Suarez of One Miami, Rob Abston of PLAN, Progressive Leadership Action Network, Jay Alexander of the CCCC, the Revival of the Civilian Conservation Corps, and Sandy Leon, economic activist and healthcare activist from the greater Dade County area. So I want to welcome you on behalf of myself and my co-producer, Ms. Mickey Royce of the Media Goddess Worldwide. I want to thank our sponsors, Imagineering Productions, Web Services and SEO Services, and of course also Media Goddess Worldwide for bringing you tonight's show. I want to start off with some interesting stories that you've all, I'm sure, been following in the news. Number one, many of you will know, of course not from seeing it in commercial media, but many of you will know that there has been an occupation of Wall Street for a week now. And even though it's not available for anyone to see on the world's media, it is in fact happening. Seems to be it's not news in the Times, but it is in fact news, and it is in fact going on. So this is the first week. Yesterday there were lots of arrests, and the police are keeping people from being able to access the actual Wall Street itself. So these things are going on despite the silence of commercial media. Now the interesting thing also is that you know, many people have pointed out that the media seems to find five teabaggers in one group and gives it major treatment. But we have thousands of people out on Wall Street, and this is not an item for the actual news. So isn't that interesting? Also, I want to mention another story that's in the news. Corporations, it seems, are quietly bankrolling these redistricting plans across the country. There's corporate investing in these Tea Party campaigns, and the redistricting that's being the result of this last census is actually being opposed and thwarted through business investment. This is a question for our contestants out there. Who can tell me who has made this statement just recently? This person said, "I'm a warrior for the middle class." And it is a trick question because it's someone you would never expect to say that. Just recently, a public figure announced that he was a warrior for the middle class. So we have a special prize for anybody who knows that. Who is it? You can email me at rick@avaryvoice.com. And let me know, who is it? It's just recently announced that I'm a warrior for the middle class. I will give you a clue. He also said he'd be marching with union members during any strikes. So that is a hint. Also, another interesting story. It seems that the White House has weighed in a big way to try to adjust this mortgage deal that's out there. You know, there's been a task force of attorney generals, and they were tasked with trying to find out what the best results would be in this foreclosure scandal, the robo signings and all. And the White House is weighing in that they'd just like to see all this settled. And a small fee paid by the banks, no big investigation, thank you very much, not needed. In fact, they just pressured Mr. Schneiderman, Attorney General of New York, out because he wouldn't go along with the program. Give me just a second, and we'll have that details for you ahead. In just a few minutes, we'll have Dr. Templin with us, so stick around.
When we'll all be union and we'll all be free, there's a better world to come, don't you see?
Okay. Now, this story about the Tea Party occupying Wall Street. In this action, the protests are continuing. Demonstrators are camping out in the financial district. This is in part organized by Adbusters, but the anti-corporate protesters have been very, very lightly covered in the New York Times. One piece on the 18th largely was about how the police have successfully blocked access to Wall Street. And the caption was Wall Street protest whirls on. There was some remarks on the progressive circuits about the fact that while the protests were gathering on Wall Street, there was signs of people from Wall Street were toasting them with champagne from above, and they said, why would these people be toasting with champagne? And my suggestion is probably because they were fresh out of cake. Well, it looks like we've got our first guest, so let me bring him on with no further delay. Is this Dr. Templin?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Very good. Welcome, sir. Welcome. How are you tonight?
Great. Thanks so much.
Well, we're so glad you could join us. Dr. Templin, I was wondering, I usually ask my activists who join me to talk a little bit about themselves and to tell us a little bit about yourself insofar as what was your transformation about when you went from being just another citizen, another consumer, and you decided that you had to participate, you had to be part of the solution, you had to make this a bit of a better world. So could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. And man, that's a really important question, because I think that, you know, people listening, I think we all learn so much by what motivates others to do organizing work. My name is Rich. I'm the legislative and political director for the Florida AFL-CIO. I actually came out of academics, and while a graduate student, and how I saw my life playing out is I would be a full-time academic, full-time professor, and a part-time activist. I had been very politicized by the trade issue there in the late 90s when we saw kind of the birth of the anti-globalization movement. And really thought that would play an important part of my life, but only part of my life. Then, here in Tallahassee during the 2000 recount, and seeing firsthand and up close how even in the United States of America an election could be, you know, just completely stolen, I realized that that we were in trouble. That the future of the country and everybody who lives here, and by extension the world, that we were in trouble. So I just kind of reoriented my priorities and decided to work full time as an activist and part time as an academic. And I've been with the labor movement ever since.
Oh, that's fantastic. I come from a long line of unionists myself. I'm from the Pittsburgh area originally. And I had uncles and grandparents and cousins who were all union men and women. So tell us, what kind of work are you up to now as Director of Legislative Affairs, working in Tallahassee? Boy, your work's cut out for you, sir.
I joke with folks sometimes. My job is to march up to the Capitol, let Republican legislators throw bricks at my head, say thank you, and come back the next morning and do it again. We've got so much activity happening around the state. During the 2011 legislative session, the earlier this year. So much was at stake. We saw probably the most aggressive kind of anti-worker agenda that anyone had seen in the state of Florida. And, of course, it was carefully coordinated with what was going on in Wisconsin, what was going on in Ohio, what was going on in Michigan, what was going on in New Hampshire. You know, I mean, this was something that was happening all over the country. And we really dug in as a movement and decided that we can't do things the way that we've done them before. And we completely shifted how we approached the legislative process. In the past, we had 250, 300 union members come to the state capitol one week during session and lobby up at the capitol, and there were some events, and then they left. And when all the attacks on working folks came out here in Florida this session, of course, Wisconsin was already deep into the struggle, and a lot of people were saying, "Well, why don't we? You know, why? When are we going to get 100,000 people at the Capitol? You know, when are we going to take over the Capitol buildings on a Saturday?" And I and some others realized, you know, that's not going to happen. I mean, it isn't going to happen. And one of the main reasons is just logistics. Madison, Wisconsin, is 2 hours away from everywhere in the state, whereas Tallahassee is incredibly geographically remote. I mean, if you've got folks coming up from Miami, you're looking at 9 hours on a bus just to get here. And that doesn't leave a lot of time for a mobilization before you've got to put them back in the bus and get people home. So we decided to do things a little different, and we realized that what was really powerful in Wisconsin, it wasn't the Saturdays with 100,000 people, it was the Mondays with a couple hundred people. It was the sustained effort that was going on that was really having the impact. So we eliminated our legislative conference that one week that I talked about, and we decided to ask all the central labor councils around Florida to commit to sending two people per week. And we would create the Working Families Lobby Corps, and this would be a core group of people. So we were hoping for 20 people a week that were here in the halls of the Capitol day in and day out every single week of the legislative session. Well, that first week we had 18, and we were real excited. We were real happy. The labor movement can be a little bit like a big super tanker. It takes a long time to change direction, and it's really difficult to slow down once it's going. And so we were a little concerned, but we were happy when 18. Well, the next week we had about 40. The week after that, we had about 50. The week after that, we had about 65. And so this thing just caught on like wildfire. And then the police officers and the firefighters and the different groups and the teachers, they saw what was going on, and they started bringing up people. So for the first time, at least in recent memory, this legislative session was characterized by literally hundreds of working people packing the committee rooms, in the hallways, camping outside legislators' offices, and we think it had a huge impact. And we have been traveling the state over the last 2 or 3 months, getting everything in place, reaching out to allies to the labor movement. So it's not just union members, but all working people, and we're preparing to do very much the same thing come January.
Well, I've been an activist for a long time. And I remember those dark days of the 70s and the late 60s when it seemed for a time that some had been convinced in the labor movement that progressive activists weren't on the same side. And I got to tell you, when I see union of activists and progressives and greens all working together, boy, I'll tell you what, it gives this old activist lots of hope.
Well, you know, but that is the hope. I mean, that is the only thing that can happen. You know, because of our legislative experiences and because of the truly cooperative, appreciative, deep relationships that we formed with other groups, whether it be our allies in the immigrants' rights community, whether it be our allies in the LGBT community, the green community, those were relationships that we realized, you know, just how critical they were. So in June, after the session had concluded, we had a festival in Central Florida, and we had over 6,000 activists came to the Festival for Florida's Future. And so in addition to the 6,000 folks that were there, there were also 48 different organizations that had tables set up in an exhibit area. And again, this was the entire gamut of the important communities on the left that are all doing great work on their own for good work coming together. We had 24 different teach-ins and workshops where different organizations, held small classes throughout the day to bring people up to speed. And, you know, we were able to build a database of folks, and, we're just reaching out in communities all over the state. And a lot of them are folks that come on your show, a lot of the organizations and individuals that we're working with. So I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. That, I mean, it is what has to happen. We are no longer talking about a union movement in the state of Florida. We're talking about a true working families movement. And that's our goal. That's our focus. And, you know, we're looking to help anyone that we can to make that a reality.
Well, I do want to discuss a couple more broad brush issues, but I do want to drill in on a couple things in specific.
Sure.
You know, one of the other things that seems to me to be working in our favor, and that's important to say because, God darn it, there's so many forces against us. But it seems that this Republican, this GOP, this big business attack on the working people is so ubiquitous that they are helping us forge relationships. Looking what they did to the police officers, looking what they've done to teachers, looking what they've done in this state, for example, to the prison security staff.
Right.
Could you address some of those specific attacks in our state?
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, this past legislative session, and again, it wasn't just here in Florida. It's all over the country. You know, these guys started believing their own hype. They really started believing their own spin, and seemed to operate under this real delusion that, you know, the majority of the American people and the majority of the people here in the state of Florida have been fooled by their crap, and that the last election was something other than really just an electoral fluke. And if you look at the numbers, that becomes pretty evident that it's not that the people of Florida woke up one day with a bad case of crazy and decided that, you know, all of these radical policies were the way to go. It was just an isolated election, and these guys are starting to believe that, you know, and so they're overreaching, and they're doing our work for us. If you look at some of the issues that you mentioned, police officers, firefighters have long been, Republican stalwarts here in the state of Florida.
Exactly.
So what do the Republican legislators do? Well, they go after their unions. They decide that, you know, these folks that save our lives and keep our communities safe, they don't deserve a voice in the political process. So we're gonna gag their unions. You know what? We created a budget deficit, $3.68 billion budget deficit, through an incredibly irresponsible tax policy. So the way we're going to pay for our deficit is we're going to take it out of teachers, firefighters, police officers with a 3% pay cut, really the first income tax in Florida history. If you look at the prisons, I mean, absolutely, they decided, you know what, these guys from the GEO Group and these other multinational private prison corporations have been camped out in our office for the last 2 years. They've been writing us fat campaign checks. Now's the time to throw tens of thousands of hardworking public sector prison workers, again, that keep us safe and do an excellent job of trying to manage. Our prisons actually have some of the better records on human rights and prison rights. Well, they decided, you know, we're going to privatize them. We're going to kick them out. We're going to take their benefits. We're going to pay them $10 an hour instead of a living wage. And you know, those kinds of things are simply, you know, forcing people to wake up and realize that the whole ideology, the whole Friedman School of Economics, Chicago School of Economics, Reaganomics, whatever you want to call it, but that it's flawed, and that the goal here is to victimize working people for the benefit of the top 1% of the country and of the state of Florida. And they're doing the work for us. They are bringing people together. They are making people realize that if they don't band together, if they don't work together, they're all going to be victims of this really, really bad agenda.
Dr. Templin, let me ask you this. What is on your immediate agenda, sir? What are you working on right now?
Well, as I mentioned before, we're really gearing up for the upcoming legislative session. There isn't a lot of and we're also working, of course, on the redistricting process throughout this whole public hearing debacle or charade, really, is what it's been. But we've been working with our partners and allies around the state to make sure that folks are a part of that process, to make sure that we're holding their feet to the fire, to make sure that the will of the voters through Amendments 5 and 6 is being adopted, and so that we're going to maybe finally have some competitive political districts in the state so that people can truly participate in the political process here. But you know, I think one of the things that we're working on the most, and it's an issue that's really important to me as someone who's got to kind of see the different policy points and the pieces moving around the board here at the state capitol, and that's our budget. You know, Florida's tax policy is so outdated. It really is just a collection of loopholes, exemptions, special interest carve-outs, that we are just not generating the revenue that we need to fund even the most basic critical programs. You know, they talked about this past session a $3.68 billion budget deficit. Well, they act like that it's some kind of act of nature, that it's a hurricane that just popped up. You know, this just happened. It didn't just happen. They did this on purpose. Right. I mean, this was an act of commission on the part of the legislature over the last 12 years, where they have just taken. I mean, just think of, you know, when they say that they have to put an income tax on teachers and firefighters and police officers, 3%, people that haven't gotten a raise in 6 years, state workers who are making $18,000 a year are going to lose have already lost 3% of their pay after no raise for the last 6 years. Now, when they say that they're going to do that, they say, well, we don't have a choice. You know, tough decisions have got to be made. We've got to balance the budget. We don't have a choice. Of course they had a choice. For example, they could close the combined reporting loophole that lets out-of-state corporations shift all their profits to Denver, Colorado, where there is no corporate income tax, and they escape all their tax liability. If they were to close that loophole, they would generate over $300 million on day one. The exemption for S corporations here in the state of Florida, if they were to close that loophole, they would generate $860 million in the first year alone. If you look at some of our sales tax exemptions, I think a lot of your listeners probably understand how sales taxes work in Florida. You want to buy a small fishing boat to take the wife and kids fishing, you pay sales taxes on it. You buy a $6 million yacht, you pay no sales taxes. You buy a plane ticket, you pay sales taxes on that. You buy your own corporate jet, you pay no sales taxes on it. You buy a ticket to a baseball game, you're going to sit in the cheap seats, you're going to pay taxes. You buy a corporate skybox, you pay no taxes. If we were just to close some of those exemptions, we would generate over $250 million in the first year alone. So they have all kinds of choices that they can make instead of the biggest single cut to education spending in the history of Florida. That went through this year. The 3% income tax on working people, that went through this year. A 54% reduction in unemployment benefits when our unemployment rate is still one of the worst in the nation. We've got 900,000 long-term unemployed in the state that can't find work, and even the state's own demographers and statisticians are saying it's going to be a minimum of 4 years before we get back to pre-recession levels. Well, they took 54% of their benefits away. All of that to balance the budget, when in reality, the exemptions I just told you about, I just generated $1.8 billion, and I didn't even break a sweat, and it only took me about 3 minutes.
Well, I'm sure that tax break on buying private jets really helped out the working class, don't you think?
Right. But I think the sad thing is that so many working people actually believe that garbage, because we've been fed it by the mainstream media for the last 30 years, that you've got to have tax cuts for the wealthy to create jobs. That's the only way to do it. I mean, that's nonsense. The reason the unemployment rate is high is because corporations are laying people off because there's no spending power. I mean, the job creators is not the top 2%. The job creators is all of us. It's the consumers, it's the workers in this country who create all wealth. And, you know, we've got to get beyond this absolutely disastrously failed policy of trickle-down economics against Chicago, whatever you want to call it, and get back to some real economic fundamentals. And I'm just still concerned that conversation isn't happening. We started to hear the Obama administration start talking about that a little bit over the last week or so, but there's nobody out there talking about, look, the entire economic model that we've had in this country since Reagan is a disaster. It brought us to this place, and the only way that we're going to get out of the current economic hard times is to reverse course and to start getting spending power, rebuilding the middle class, giving people the opportunity to fully participate in the economy. Until that happens, jobs will not be created. By extension, state budgets will not be stabilized. We'll still see cuts to education spending, cuts to Medicare, cuts to Medicaid. Our people will continue to get sick and die. I mean, it's just we've got to reverse course. And I think one of my biggest concerns is there's just not enough people out there, really talking about these fundamental economic issues.
Well, sir, thank you so much, Dr. Templin. I would love to have you on sometime in the future for a whole hour, and you could be informative the whole time, I'm sure. I'm going to have to let you go now. I know you have some other things to talk about. But thank you again, sir, and please, would love to have you back again, sir. Okay?
Absolutely, anytime, and thank you for this work. I mean, this is really critical alternative media work, and thank you so much for doing it.
Well, I think it's important that progressive voices are heard. We're all news junkies out here in progressive land, and they need to hear some of the good work that's being done by people like yourself. Thanks again, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye, sir. Bye-bye. Hi there, is this Jason?
Hey, Richard, how you doing, buddy?
Very good, sir. Welcome back, Mr. Smith. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
Real good, real good. Jason, I hear you're working with Awake the State. Tell us a little bit about what you're up to these days.
Well, Awake the State is a movement that, just to kind of go back in history a little bit and give some folks a little bit of background, when Rich was talking about the coalition coming together of progressives at these big meetings and these large the AFL-CIO Rich Mission, the picnic that in Orlando that was put on. Something that kind of came out organically from this and is a grassroots movement with all of these different organizations working together is Awake the State. And so Awake the State is right now planning on having a summit that I want to just let everybody know about on October the 22nd and 23rd on that weekend. I encourage everybody to go to awakethestate.com. On Tuesday is when the registration is going to be up online for everybody to go to. It's not there now, so don't try to go there and look. But I want to encourage everybody to go to this summit so that you can come and get some training. It's going to be free, training as far as on Sunday is the day that they're going to do the training. I hear that Representative Grayson is going to be there also to speak on Saturday. And so I just want to encourage everybody to get involved with that movement because it's just a wonderful grassroots thing that is happening in the state of Florida, and it's taken off by storm. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. The whole Awake the State movement was the right thing at the right time, and clearly it touched an awful lot of people. Can you give us some more details about where Awake the State is going?
It's growing at a very fast pace. They just started an Awake the State in Miami. Volusia started one recently, and we even saw one pop up in Jacksonville. It's Tampa and St. Pete are the areas where I live personally, and we have a very robust, large group of progressives, fortunately, here to participate in the Awake the State movement. And it just gives these folks an opportunity who might be part of the green movement or the LGBT community or any progressive-leaning community that isn't labor to sit down at a round table and talk about, okay, what do we care about and what sort of things do we need to bring to the attention of the larger community and what sort of things can we that issues that we care about overlap so that we can work together on them. And that's what you see in Awake the State is all these groups coming together and working on common overlapping issues.
Wow, that's excellent. I've watched that Awake the State movement grow, and to see how it's taken off has just been absolutely amazing. And I'm so glad to see you've been able to put your energy into it too. You're an invaluable progressive in this state, and You know, you just got to keep up the good work that you're doing, brother. It's really awesome.
Hey, I appreciate it. And, you know, Ray Seaman started it all, and without him and his ideas and his brain power and you know, his networking ability, I mean, it really a lot of credit needs to go to Ray Seaman, Susan Randolph, Susan Smith. There's a lot of folks, Tim Heberlein locally. They're all just wonderful progressives who really believe in the cause, and they make it happen day in and day out. And they're all going to be there at this Progressive Summit. I hope that everyone can be there. And we just had a rally, actually. I don't know if you saw some of it, caught a little bit of it in the news, the CNN Tea Party Republican debate protest.
Right,
and,
right.
And that was, if you were there, you would have seen firsthand what I'm talking about when I say diversity on the progressive side. You had a little bit of everybody there. And that's what it's all about, is bringing the larger community in and letting everybody have a voice, because the corporate media wants to shut us out. And we didn't get a whole lot of coverage, but what little bit of coverage we did get, you know, it was mostly progressive-leaning stations and outlets like yours. And so I appreciate the work that you're doing. And, you know, keep up the great work yourself there.
Thank you, brother. Why don't you go ahead and give our listeners one more time. When is that conference you were talking about?
The
summit?
The summit's going to be on October the 22nd and 23rd. You can go to awakethestate.com and register, but that link to register won't be available until Tuesday, I'm told. So check with your Awake the State networks internally on Facebook and Twitter for additional information if you need it. And also coming up either in November and December, I'm trying to coordinate a free media training in West Central Florida. So I'll be announcing all that information. I'll make sure you have that to share with folks when it's available.
Okay. Thank you so much. Sure. Appreciate it. Jason, come back anytime, okay?
All right, Richard. Thanks, bro.
Okay. Bye-bye. That was Jason Smith of Awake the State. Thanks, Jason. Now let me bring on, I think we have here, Jose Suarez. Jose, is that you? Oh, let's see. I guess we have... Jose, are you there?
Yes, hello. How are you?
Very good. Nice to hear from you, Jose. How's things down in Miami?
Well, you know, we're keeping up the fight down here and trying to stay, you know, keep ourselves busy. We had a very busy August recess as One Miami... you know, visited all of the elected House members here, and we were able to meet with some of them, and others didn't, but they sure heard from us loud and clear.
Now, you know, those of us who follow the larger Dade County issues are aware that there's been quite a bit of, should we say, political shakeup going on. That's all well and good for the suits. What's going on for the working poor? Tell us, Jose, what is there any good news on the front for working people? I know the Overtown Project's supposedly going to provide some jobs. What's going on the jobs front?
Well, the jobs front, I think One Miami right now, we're focused with all of our supporters and pushing for portions of the Americans Job Act because we feel that that's key. We feel that business, it's enough is enough with business as usual. We've for years now given these huge corporations around the country and our state and even in our county these huge tax breaks, all in the belief that they were going to do the right thing and create jobs, and it just hasn't happened. As a matter of fact, the reverse has happened. So the job situation in Dade County right now is, I would say, the bleakest it's been since the days of the Great Depression. I think that CBS, the local CBS affiliate, came out, I believe it was in June or July, with a piece that said that when you really take a look at Dade County and you look at the current unemployed, the underemployed, and those who are just frustrated with the situation and haven't found any work, that Dade County's unemployment rate is closer to 23%. And that's,
my God.
That's pretty staggering. And so, you know, One Miami, we're trying to get as many of these people together that are just tired with business as usual and get in the face of our elected officials and tell them that enough is enough. They can take away our jobs, they can take away our paychecks, they can even take away our homes. But the one thing they won't take away from us is our vote, and we're ready to act on that come November of 2012.
Let me ask you this. I haven't had a chance to follow Dade County budget very closely. I assume that the county and the cities have been cutting back on services, cutting back on their staff, so there's additional unemployment and hardship coming from the government sector as well.
Well, I can just tell you that we've been pretty hot and heavy in attending all of the county mayors, the new county mayor. If you recall, the mayor was recalled about, you know, Carlos Alvarez was recalled, then we put in Carlos Jimenez. And so Carlos Jimenez ran on a platform of, you know, reducing property taxes. And I think everybody thought that was great until, you know, we started asking people, you know, how much are you really going to save on your property taxes? Who's really going to benefit from, you know, the reduction of property tax? And, of course, we find out that, you know, corporations like AT&T and FPL and the Downtown Development Authority, those are the people that are going to be raking in millions upon millions of dollars because of this lowering of the property taxes. And so what that's translated to is the mayor coming out with what he calls a very bold and ambitious plan of laying off about 1,300 workers.
Oh, my God.
Rolling back raises and incentives. I can't remember to, you know, but a couple of years' worth is in the plan, because the county's faced with a $400 million or so budget gap, just with the lowering of the property taxes and also the decline in property values. And all this comes really because when you look at Miami-Dade County and you look at the state of Florida, it's a very regressive tax system. The only way you have to collect taxes really is through sales tax and property taxes. And so, you know, those I think are you know, things that really have I think that when we, you know, when we take a look over history, are, you know, that taxation policy keeps people down. And so, you know, we've been heavily involved with the mayor, and he's only got a year to do this, right? He's got to go up back for reelection and November of 2012, and we're telling them, I mean, you do this and you've just guaranteed yourself one of the shortest runs as a Dade County mayor and you know, in the short history where the county has had a strong mayor. But it's really depressing to hear that the county's going to dump, you know, 1,200 jobs and put people out on the street into an unemployment market that's already saturated in Dade County.
Has anyone come forward on the state legislative front or the national legislative front who's really become a strong advocate for the working poor in Miami? Is anybody home?
Well, I think there's the opportunity for, you know, a few people. I know that State Representative Brainin and a couple of others have, you know, come out and spoken in favor of, you know, doing what the state can to create jobs. And you know, but as we know, in the state of Florida, if you're a Democrat in the state, you know, in the state legislature, it's an uphill battle.
Yeah.
And you know, and locally, or on the federal level, I'll say that we've, as you know, we were at the CPC with Frederica Wilson, and she's come out and, you know, talked about some things. I know that we recently protested a fundraiser for Eric Cantor, and we found out the location, and we took some of our One Miami supporters there, and the media, all the local media came out to cover it. And, you know, our message there was, and sure, some of them have also talked about job creation, but our message was, you know, it's what are they doing in a climate like this, holding a fundraiser, $10,000 a plate, Eric Cantor coming down, you know, when these guys, you know, these people need to be here assuring their constituents or either back in D.C. trying to find a solution instead of saying, no, I won't vote for your plan because we're not of the same party. That's just the kind of stuff that, you know, is really becoming overly frustrating to the general public. We see
Jose, let me ask you a question,
supporters.
Sir. I need to bring on Rob Abston from Plan. If you'd like
sure.
to stay with us and you know continue to maybe contribute to some of the conversations, you're welcome to. But
okay.
Thank you. Let me bring on Rob Abston of Plan. Hello, Rob.
Hey.
Rob,
hi, Rick. How
I
you
also
doing
have good to see you, buddy. Good to see you. How's things with you and Plan?
Plan is doing great things. We are organizing our state council here in the state of Florida. I'm actually down in Palm Beach County talking with I heard you had one of the folks from Wake the State on earlier.
Yeah.
And I'm meeting with Wake the State Palm Beach County today down in Boca Raton. And one of the things that we're discussing with this group, it's a broad coalition, as your earlier guest talked about. But one of the things that we're discussing doing as a plan project is putting an amendment on the Florida Constitution, putting an amendment on the ballot, to amend the Florida State Constitution to allow us to recall elected officials. As you well know, sometimes after we elect somebody, we get a surprise, as we did when some of us weren't surprised, but I think some of the folks that voted for Rick Scott for governor are starting to experience a little bit of voter regret. And it would
Let's
be
hope.
Wonderful if we didn't have to wait 6 years to throw the phone out. So what this constitutional amendment will do, if we're able to pass it, and we'd like to get this passed in the next 2 years, is this will allow voters in the state of Florida, for whom the governor works, by the way, he works for us, we don't work for him, this will allow the voters in the state of Florida to recall any elected official that decides that he is more important than the people who hire him.
Rob, let me ask you a question. Is this the sort of situation that with 10,000 signatures, this will go on a ballot amendment, or what is the procedure for something like this?
Well, that's a good question, Rick. In the state of Florida, they avoided giving us the ability to recall state elected officials when they had the Florida State Constitutional Amendment a number of years ago. Probably just CYA that figured that it's better not to allow the citizens to have that opportunity because they're protecting themselves. However, they did permit Florida to have something called the Citizens Initiative. With Citizens Initiative, the citizens are able to initiate their own constitutional amendment. Now, in order to get the question on the ballot, it will take about 10,000 signatures. You're right on. Somewhere in the area, 9,800, maybe a little bit more. The idea is that we get all these signatures on the ballot. We get all these signatures on petitions from around the state. Now, of course, we won't stop with 10,000 signatures. I think we can raise 20,000. I think when the popularity of the governor is down in the toilets like it is right now, down around 29%, I think the other 71% of the people that voted in the state will be happy to sign this petition. So we're going to go out and get this on the petition for the, if not before, at least by the 2012 election cycle. And in 2012, we'll give the citizens in the state of Florida the ability to vote on whether or not they think it's important to provide a mechanism in the Florida Constitution, the voters of the state, the ability to recall their elected officials.
Rob, let me ask you a question. Is there a time window that once you start this procedure, you have 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, or is it based on the voting cycle? How is there a time lock on that?
I'm not aware of a time limit for gathering the signatures. However, there is a period of time in advance of the election that the petitions have to be presented. I'm not certain on that. We're in the infancy of starting this petition drive, So I will get you more details so that you can inform your listeners for your show next Sunday. But I believe that, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that we just have to have it in a timely manner, in time to get it on the ballot prior to the next election cycle.
Super. There's probably a way of back timing it, you know, a certain number of months or something, unless those rascals in the Republican strangle legislature have made it virtually impossible to do that. Listen, let me ask you to pause 1 second. Jose, what do you think about this idea of arranging a petition to have some of these governmental officials available for recall? This is Jose Suarez of One Miami.
Well, you know, I think it's a you know, great idea. I think we should all have to, you know, have the every state should have the ability to do that. I find it, you know, it's we did it here in Dade County with our mayor. I don't think that in hindsight necessarily the voter turnout was there for the recall election or the candidates that ran after the fact, but Dade County did it. They recalled the mayor, an extremely unpopular mayor. And I think that it is a community, you know, that's just tired of dealing with politics as usual. And I think you see that popping up not just in Dade County. I think you see it throughout the state. I see it all over Florida, especially after, you know, our great governor, right? I think a lot of people have asked themselves, you know, if they voted for him, what they were thinking of that day. But I think it's something that, why shouldn't the public be able to recall elected officials that don't, especially in a time where we see so many elected officials that believe the people work for them, not that they work for the people.
Yeah, it seems that idea of public service has slipped off the ALEC agenda. You know, obviously there's so many states are suffering these same kind of, you know, evidently universally applied to all legislation actions. Do you think there's a chance that enough people are aware of this this kind of wholesale de-democratization of state level governments? Do you think there's a chance that people are going to awake as we need them to? I'll ask you, Rob, first, and then Jose, if you'd respond also.
Yeah, actually, if you look down the list of states that have citizen recall, you'll find that there's only, I think, 26 states that have that ability. Many more states have the ability to amend their constitutions. And what I expect, as you know, the plan is a national organization. And right now we're in the process of setting up the Florida State Council. And so we're going to start with the Florida Initiative. But the idea is that if we are successful in rolling out this recall against Rick Scott, there are a number of state governors that we can follow up on. And I believe John Kasich would be among those. I think that Rick Snyder would be among those. So I think that you can see this as an epidemic. Something of epidemic proportion that's going to start across the United States, as people are getting fed up with these right-wing politicians that have been funded by Koch brothers and have managed to sneak into these elected positions. And people are wise enough to this. We're like your One Miami guy said there, we're fed up, and we're going to start acting.
You know, another topic that needs to be addressed in this same context is the actions of these banks and their foreclosures. Jose, let me ask you this: are foreclosures in Miami picking back up again? What is that part of the economic situation look like in Miami?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on who you talk to. I think that if you talk to real estate brokers and the Chamber of Commerce, they'll try and get everyone to believe that, you know, this the decline is actually over and that, you know, business is actually picking up again. And I'll tell you, in Dade County, I guess business has picked up again. The question is, who's buying? It's not people from here in Dade County that are buying. It's people, I would suspect that the majority of them are from overseas. But I can tell you that we have so many people that we meet along the way that tell us, and it's all the same story. You know, I've been out of a job for anywhere from, 8 to 9 months to 2 years plus, right? And, I'm talking about people that have worked their entire lives, have contributed to the system their entire lives by paying their taxes, and now they have, a government that's completely turned their backs on them, and, they're allowing banks to take their homes. You know, banks who maybe single-handedly played the biggest role in the economic crisis that we're in the first place, banks that we, bailed out so that they would work with people and loan more money, and instead they kept it. So I can tell you that it's still a pretty big problem in Dade County. We're not happy with it. It's one of the things I think that we, try to become a voice for our supporters on, is that this can't continue. At the end of the day, what's a bank going to do with a house they can't sell anyways? And in the process, they're ruining people's lives. And kind of circling back to the topic before, I think that people are waking up. People have woken up. I think some of the people that are still taking their cat nap are some of the elected officials that are sitting in, city and county commissions and the state legislatures and even as far up as D.C. They're sitting there and they've fallen asleep and people have woken up. I mean, it's okay for people to prosper in this country, but when the middle class is disappearing, you see these huge corporations and these CEOs raking in the millions and millions and millions that they do, and at what cost are they doing? What cost is all this happening? It's happening at the cost of ruining what used to be the foundation of this country, which was always to have a strong middle class.
Well, the president has just assured us that he's a warrior for the middle class. So I suppose that means much like the solution in the Gulf that everything's going to be okay now. So I'm looking forward to him to put his actions where his rhetoric is. As we're coming down the home stretch, guys, let me ask you this. I saw a report in today's Sun Sentinel that there's the building is starting again. Building development is kind of a two-edged sword in this state. We've seen the kind of construction, the kind of development that has been careless of environmental resources. Do you think there's a chance that if development, let's be positive, when development comes back, that we'll still have some kind of handle on how development happens? In other words, baby with the bathwater, when we get development, are we going to have to take it at whatever price? Any thoughts on that? Let me ask you, Rob, first.
You came to the right place there. As a matter of fact, we're having a big discussion about that right here in Palm Beach County with a candidate that I'm supporting for county commission. And that's his biggest role is responsible growth management. And I can tell you, in response to your last question of our partner down there in One Miami about whether or not the housing crisis and foreclosure crisis is still affecting people, there's 44,500 vacant homes in Palm Beach County right now, and there's another 100,000 that are on the list for foreclosure. So this crisis isn't finished, and it's not going to be finished for a while. So before those builders can start building those new homes that they're looking to build, they're going to have to fill up those empty homes first. And the word on the street is that people are moving out of Florida for the first time instead of moving into Florida. So before we can start even thinking about responsible growth management, we have to start thinking about responsible job development. And I think that's what really the focus is here with the elected representatives that I'm working with in Palm Beach County, is how to bring the jobs back here so that we can keep those 100,000 people in those homes instead of putting them into foreclosure, and so that we can start creating the jobs that are going to bring people in to fill up those other 44,500 homes. And then the next thing we have to think about is we're sitting right next to the Everglades in Palm Beach County. We're sitting right next to the Loxahatchee Wildlife Reserve.
And whatever we do, we have to start thinking about how we're going to manage the growth around these areas so that we protect these environmentally sensitive areas. Because if we don't, we're going to start having saltwater intrusion come in. As the water table goes down too low, we're going to have – it can be a crisis. Now, another thing that's on the horizon, Rick, that a lot of people aren't talking about yet, you know the problems that we had with Katrina in after the hurricane with those levees that burst in the water?
Right.
We got levees right around Lake Okeechobee out here that are in trouble. And if we don't fix those, we're going to have the same problem even without a hurricane. We're going to have the same problem pretty soon with the flooding from Lake Okeechobee that's going to be coming through those levees that have been in need of repair for the last 20 years and nobody's done anything about. So growth management, yes, but more importantly, we need to look at the long-term impact of what we're doing here with all of the infrastructure, including the Lake Okeechobee, including the Wildlife Reserve, including the Everglades.
You know, to dip into my little pot of cynicism that I keep near me at all times. Yeah, I don't know if you are aware, but it's just recently been in the news that Jebi, our former nefarious government, has invested in a new line of business. He's in the disaster business, so it may behoove these small government types that if we have more disaster in the future, it may be privatized, except for the payoff part, and that of course will be shared by taxpayers. Jose, I know for a while there were some people, I know Max Rameau was helping some people with foreclosure issues and taking back some properties. Is that still going on in Miami? Or are you not in touch with that part of the problem?
I'm really not that in touch with the problem. I know that over that, you know, that potential solution to the problem. I know that, you know, I know something some about it. I know that it continues. But I think at the rate that foreclosures are kind of going through the courts and, you know, what the efforts that a couple of people can pull off is kind of two different stories. And I tell you, because we see them every day. And, you know, when we talk about jobs and we're talking about the construction industry, you know, I think that, you know, we look hopefully for something like the Jobs Act to start providing it. But you can't also continue the construction trade on the backs of, you know, on the backs of hard workers who you're not going to fairly pay a living wage to in the process. And it's one of the things, actually, tomorrow we have an event. We're having a rally at Norland High School just to kind of emphasize on the American Job Act's focus on education through renovating a lot of our schools. So we'll be at one of these high schools that serves an example of one of the schools that could use some good renovations so that our children can have the best opportunity possible to, you know, hopefully have an opportunity at what's left of the American dream by the time some people are done with it. But it's tomorrow at 3 o'clock at Norland High School in Miami Gardens. I know that State Representative Oscar Brannon's going to be there. There could be some other potential big name surprises that are going to show up and rally with us, because we feel that by investing in our schools and renovating them will in turn create good jobs for our communities. And, you know, I'd also like to, if I could, tell everyone that they can follow us on our website.
Please go ahead, give us that.
It's www.one. Written out, O-N-E, MiamiNow.org. And then they can also see us on Facebook and Twitter. But we feel that, you know, the fight's just started. We're starting to see, I think you're starting to see what some of, you know, One Miami and a lot of the efforts going on around the country of people who have woken up and have decided to take action. Have started to change the debate, and Congress is starting to have to focus on job creation versus, you know, tax cuts.
Well, thank you so much, Jose. I really appreciate it. And Rob, thank you. I want to thank the good people of One Miami and the good people of Plan for joining us tonight. Gentlemen, I want to have you both back again, because unfortunately jobs and economic issues are going to be with us for some time to come. I wish you both the best of luck, and please Don't be strangers here at Progressive News Network. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Sure. Anytime.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, friends, there is a better world coming.
I'm a union man in a union war.
You'll hear about it here at Progressive News Network. Commercial media may not cover progressives and progressive issues, but you will hear the voice of actual working progressives every day when you join us here at Progressive News Network. Don't forget, go to newmercurymedia.com/pnn.html or just newmercurymedia.com. You can listen to our show day or night, early or late, live on Sundays at 7 o'clock or anytime, because there is a better world a coming. There's a better world a-coming, and the progressives of Florida are building it. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week. This is Richard Spezak, News Director of Progressive News Network, signing off. There's a better world a-coming.
There's a better world that's coming. I'll tell you why. Better world that's coming. I'll
tell you why.
We'll beat 'em on the land, on the sea, and in the sky.